Our next guest here on the show is our Sportsnet Hockey Insider, and he joins us every Monday at 3 o'clock. He is Chris Johnson. How's it going, Chris?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. Did you have a deep dish pizza to celebrate Thanksgiving in Chicago?
I did not, unfortunately. It was a quick in and out yesterday, but I'm in Dallas now, and I'm sure to experiment with some of the meat they have down here before I'm leaving town here.
I'm sure that won't be a hard thing to find in Texas. so we got to ask you, I mean, the buzz here, as you probably know, is all around Elias Pettersson and how his first two games has shaken up. From what you can gather, is he the talk of the league as well amongst players and execs?
Well, certainly the buzz extends beyond Vancouver on Elias Pettersson. And you know, when you have any player thrust in the position he is, you know, still a teenager, and to, you know, make the start he did, I think, with, you know, putting up the 5 points, but also, you know, just the huge number of positive plays that you saw in those games. I mean, it is something people are going to take notice of. And, you know, one thing, you know, that I've been impressed by the little bit I've been able to see him is you know, how good of a job he's done in not getting filled in defensively. I mean, it's a tall ask to come over and play in the NHL, even with obviously the great season he had in Sweden last year playing with men. I mean, this is a different step, and then to be playing center ice and to be playing on a team that, you know, I don't think is too deep of a team. You know, they've given him some, you know, pretty favorable starts in terms of, you know, having a lot of his shift start in the offensive zone, but, you know, he's more than held his own through these games, and I think, you know, done more than that when he gets in the offensive zone with some of those fantastic plays he's able to make in the games against Calgary. So, you know, he's certainly someone in the first week of the season that's opened some eyes, and you know, I'm sure that the attention will come both from fans and media members, but also opposing teams, and you know, it'll be interesting to see what he gets in Carolina tomorrow, you know, with the Hurricanes off to a good start themselves and having last change and all those things, you know, where they prioritize their matchups against Pettersson.
You know, throughout the entire summer, Chris, it was like, well, Pettersson's probably going to start the year on the wing. He's probably going to start the year on the wing. And then as we got closer to camp, it became clear that the Canucks wanted to give him a shot at center and give him every opportunity, every look possible. You know, that situation in Toronto, you know, Marner was kind of drafted as a center, and so was William Nylander, and those two have never been able to transition off of the wing, or at least not extremely successfully to this point. You know, it can be, if you start them out on the wing, it can become difficult as they get, you know, further into their NHL career to make that transition.
Well, and especially, you know, if they're doing well at the wing. You know, I think in the case of Marner and Nylander specifically, you know, the Leafs haven't really needed it, and especially now signing John Tavares, they have three pretty good centermen, and so, you know, those guys benefit with being on the wing. But, you know, I've seen a little bit of an evolution in recent years with how teams approach this. You know, even Jesperi Kotkaniemi, the 18-year-old that started the season with the Montreal Canadiens, has started as a center here in their first couple games. And, you know, he was another one where I think a lot of people just would have expected with his age, with his, you know, relative lack of size, that, you know, he would have been a candidate for the wing. And you know, I think that the teams are finding they can get away with this, you know, and you know, Jack Eichel largely has been a center. He just played a little bit of wing. Auston Matthews was a center right off the get-go. And so I think with your high draft picks, teams are showing a little bit more willingness to take a chance that way. And you know, they do make moves to protect them in terms of the situations they put them in earlier in their careers. But, you know, I think that there's a benefit to getting adjusted there because it is two different sets of positions, playing the wing and playing center. And, you know, you might as well get used to playing some of the top players head-to-head because, you know, if you're a team, you need to know, you know, you don't need to know today if you're the Canucks, you know, what Pettersson's going to be, but over time, they have to have a good idea if he is, you know, as he looks right now, a bona fide number one centerman that they can rely on, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road once he gets fully up to speed, you know, over here in North America.
Chris, it's been about a year and a half since the 2017 NHL entry draft. And, you know, usually we do this exercise maybe 5 or 6 years after the draft, but Elias Pettersson was taken fifth in that draft. Would you do a, already after about a year and a half, would you do a bit of a kind of a reordering as of right now and maybe Pettersson's higher up your list potentially?
Yeah, I haven't spent much time studying it, but I'm pretty confident that if we did that over again, that he wouldn't get to five. And, you know, what's interesting, I remember being on the draft floor and I wouldn't say it was a surprise pick at five, but he wasn't necessarily a consensus pick at that point. And, you know, it's looking like a shrewd pick. I mean, both, you know, off of two NHL games, but I think more importantly, you know, the growth that he showed last year, you know, playing with Bäckberg in Sweden and, you know, winning individual awards over there and then shouldering a big load. I mean, you know, the kids are taking over the NHL in my eyes. I think we're seeing more and more young players, skilled players come over and make a huge impact. And you know, he looks like someone who's going to do that. And you know, I don't know that he had that buzz necessarily leading into his draft year. And, you know, that was an excellent pick by the Canucks because, you know, if we were doing it just, what, 18 months later, I'm pretty sure he wouldn't be available to them at the five position.
Chris Johnston, our Sportsnet Hockey Insider, joining us here on Reach Deep. And you took in that, Thanksgiving Sunday classic between the Leafs and the Blackhawks. Like, what a fun game that was last night. And there was a little bit of shenanigans going on between Austin Matthews and Patrick Kane that you wrote about over at Sportsnet.ca. Last week, Lars Eller got himself into a little bit of trouble with Brad Marchand for a similar type thing. But you know, this is something we're kind of seeing more of around the league. And really, I mean, it's been the talk of Twitter. It's the talk on Sportsnet.ca. Like, if anything, Chris, the NHL needs absolutely more of this to be happening.
Well, that's my view. You know, I may be a little more new school than some people who have been around the sport, you know, longer than I have or we have, guys. But, you know, I think it's good. I mean, look, they put the NHL on ESPN, too. You know, being down here in the U.S., it's not something you see a lot. And it's not just, you know, hot-dogging for hot-dogging's sake. I mean, with Matthews and Patrick Kane, you have two of the more skilled offensive players in the league. You have a game last night that looks like the 80s with goals going in from everywhere. Not a fine night to be a goaltender, but pretty fun if you're a fan or, you know, someone who's got a lot of Blackhawks or Leafs in your fantasy pool because all the good players on both teams were making some big plays. And, you know, I like to see a little bit of showmanship. You know, as we've gotten to know Austin Matthews a little better, I think we're going to see a lot more out of him. This is a guy that, you know, didn't grow up under the traditional confines of the sport, if you want to call it that. You know, growing up in Scottsdale, Arizona, he didn't play on teams a lot. He certainly grew up a long way away from Hockey Night in Canada or even, you know, some of the ways hockey's treated, you know, across the country, minor hockey, with how seriously it's taken. You know, I think that he's someone who's always had a bit more fun with the game and you know, he's not afraid to put himself out there. He doesn't mind putting sort of a target on his back or doing something. So, you know, you saw him cup his ear after putting the Leafs ahead, and then Patrick Kane matched him. And afterwards, you know, he said, you know, you just laugh when something like that happens. I mean, this guy has an incredible sense of occasion almost. And you know, I think it's good for the sport. I think it's good for the sport that he's American from a place that doesn't traditionally, you know, produce top-level hockey players, and that, you know, he's, you know, into a different level of fashion, you know, almost like we see sometimes in the NBA. You know, Austin likes to really deck himself out and just a little bit more personality than perhaps traditionally our sport has tended to encourage. And you know, I think that he's far from alone in that. And I do think because those kids are taking over right across the league and we're seeing so much offensive skill be prioritized, you know, from a young age for these guys, that a little bit more flair is going to come with it. And, you know, in my view, that's only going to be a good thing for the sport over time because, you know, it's the best way to attract new people to the game. And you know, as much as we all live and die with it in Canada, you know, the true reality is around the world, hockey's still a relatively small sport.
Chris, I agree with you. I think it's if you can add that flair, that personality to the game, it does a great job for the fan experience, but also at the same time of growing the fan base as well. You want to attract fans to those personalities, but as you mentioned, there is an old school and a new school. Has the NHL kind of gone out of their way to tell players that, hey, we want to see more of this, or is this all dependent on the players at this point?
I think it's all on the players, you know, because, you know, so many of the guys, even say Connor McDavid, right? I mean, he grew up in the more traditional hockey factory around the greater Toronto area, you know, very serious in the way he goes about his business. You know, certainly not a criticism of him, but, you know, I think of him as far more traditional in the way he carries himself, the way he plays. I mean, by far, in my eyes, the most skilled player right now in the league. And yet you wouldn't likely see any of this sort of thing out of him, you know, but there's other players a little bit more comfortable sharing that individual side. And, you know, I think it can be challenging at times for them individually because, you know, there's such an emphasis on the team in hockey and, you know, the crest on the front rather than the name on the back, you know, all those sort of old tropes that we've heard over time. But you know, I think the truth is, and it's something that Austin seems to grasp, is that when you're as good as he is and you're going to be one of the top players in the league, as long as you don't mind people asking you about it or maybe other players giving, you know, saying things to you about it, I mean, if you're comfortable being out there, I don't really see anything that can stop him. I mean, Mike Babcock, who's a pretty hard-nosed old-school coach, you know, he wasn't saying anything negative about it last night because Austin Matthews is that important to the Leafs. And, you know, I don't see anyone else in that dressing room, specifically to the Leafs, that would have trouble with it and problems with it. And, you know, Patrick Kane's won 3 Stanley Cups with the Blackhawks, you know, a Conn Smythe trophy, scored the overtime winning goal for them in a cup final. I mean, he's got pretty much free reign. So, you know, I think as players, first of all, as more guys do it, it's going to create a safe space when up for others to do it, because it won't be talked about so much. It won't be spotlighted as being unusual. And as long as the players can back it up with their performance, I don't see that much blowback for them. And frankly, I see a lot of upside. I see opportunity now that didn't always exist. And you know, I think that hockey is on the verge right now, if not, you know, entered already a very special era with all these guys. I mean, who does, you know, the Canucks, it's going to be a tough season, but I'm sure you guys have been talking about Pettersson for 2 days, and rightly so. I mean, the way the moves he makes, and you know, in Toronto, that's what Austin represented to the Leafs after so long in the wilderness. You know, Patrick Laine in Winnipeg, you know, has got some flair. I mean, the sport's fun. And when you've seen teams that haven't done well and you get players like this that come through your city, I think it's just such a breath of fresh air. And you know, it's good that we have positive things to talk about rather than just suspensions and, you know, sort of some of the brutal plays that hockey was known for in the past.
Chris Johnston, our guest here on Reach Deep, our Monday Insider, every Monday at 3:00 Pacific time. A little bit more news coming out about Seattle today, Chris, and I guess the expectation is they're, as soon as they get that team, that they're going to start looking for the hockey men to lead them into their first year as a franchise. Who do you think is on the short list for Seattle?
Well, you know, I don't think the list is completed yet. I mean, we do know they've hired Dave Tippett, you know, not necessarily to be the next GM, but to be there to talk about hockey advice. You know, even now as today they're unveiling their new practice rink, you know, someone like he can give them advice on what the team would need specific to, you know, the coaching staff and things like that when they're designing that sort of thing. But, you know, look, there's a few names that jump out at me. Kelly McCrimmon, the assistant GM in Vegas, to me, would be a perfect fit if, you know, if he was willing to leave, if that was a job that interested him, just because, you know, he went through this entire process in Vegas from the beginning with George McPhee, you know, has a good handle on, you know, the decisions they made around the expansion draft, some of the things that would pop up. And you know, beyond that fact, spent a lifetime in the sport, you know, running the Brandon Wheat Kings for many years and having success there. You know, that to me is the name, if they're going to go with a first time GM, that, you know, would make a lot of sense. There's been a lot of talk about Ken Holland potentially, you know, being a fit for Seattle. And, you know, that would require some maneuvering in the meantime, since he's, you know, got a year and almost 2 years left on his deal with the Detroit Red Wings. But, you know, with Steve Yzerman out there and dots being connected with Yzerman in the Wings, you know, perhaps as soon as next season, you know, perhaps, you know, someone like Ken Holland, if they want to go a more experienced route. And you know, I have spoken a fair bit with, you know, the guys in charge of the Seattle team, and you know, the feel that they've given me is that they haven't really made firm decisions on these sorts of things just yet. I mean, obviously they're monitoring their options, but you know, perhaps we'll see a surprise move, maybe a general manager that right now we wouldn't have on the radar as someone that you know, could lose their job, you know, might lose their job here and then within the next few months, and or you know, that could open the door for him. I mean, it's a little bit what happened with McPhee in Vegas, but you know, there's a real push on in Seattle. They're dead set on getting a team to start in the fall of 2020. And, you know, I'm not sure if they can pull it off in terms of doing everything that they have to do to get Key Arena ready for that date. But, you know, if they do, you know, we aren't looking at too long really before they're going to have people out there that need to be scouting the league and, you know, getting prepared on what their mock expansion draft might look like, because, you know, it really isn't that far off if 2020 is the start date for when they'll be picking a team.
Last thing before we let you go, Chris, any update on William Nylander with the Maple Leafs?
No, if anything, it seems that the talks have gone a little cold here with Nylander. And look, there's been a lot of focus on the issue. I think that both sides in this discussion know where they stand. And you know, they're still at least $1.5 million dollars apart per year on a long-term deal. And, you know, I think with the Leafs, that they're willing to wait, it seems very evident that William Nylander is willing to wait. And, you know, perhaps all the headlines that came out of the last week with Brendan Shanahan saying what he did about the Leafs players needing to take less with you know, a lot of media focus on this. I get the sense that the Cams have kind of, gone into hiding a little bit and have just decided to keep a low key. And Nylander skating over in Sweden, the Leafs don't look like they need any offensive help, maybe some defensive help. But, I don't see a rush here. And I really do believe the next few Mondays we might be still looking for Nylander updates, because I don't get any sense that a deal not only is imminent, but is even on the horizon here in the next couple of weeks.
Chris, at what point do you think the Leafs start considering a trade? If you think they're going to be patient, but, you know, there's an expiration date for everything, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, December 1st is the date he has to sign to play in the NHL. I think if they get anywhere close to that, I mean, even into November, they have to consider it. I know a number of teams around the league are already monitoring this, and a few have had some discussions with Kyle Dubas. It sounds like they've been short discussions and that the Leafs don't really want to entertain the idea at this point. But, you know, it could come to that. I don't think that anything can be ruled out at this point. I mean, this is a year where the Leafs feel they have to try to win the Stanley Cup. You know, you only have so long with players on entry-level deals. I mean, Auston Matthews might score 50 goals this season and make $3 million, including his bonuses. Every year after this, you're going to have to pay him $10, $11, $12 million for his production. So, you know, the Leafs can't let this sit out a year for sure. And, you know, that December 1st could sneak up quickly on them. So, you know, I think it's not at the stage yet where that's a serious discussion, but other teams are lining up for the possibility that it is in terms of, you know, what it might take to get a Nylander. You know, they see a lot of future for him, and can, you know, there's certainly teams out there that can pay him more than the Leafs can just with their cap situation. And, you know, I think if this gets to November, Toronto's going to have to seriously consider whether that might be the best option to get a resolution here.
CJ, always appreciate the time. Have a happy Thanksgiving, even though you are celebrating in Dallas. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, boys. Thanks for having me.
Sportsnet 650.